The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Hello, welcome in, everybody, and a happy good morning to you. I'm your host, Cody Cameron, stepping in for Brad Sesmatt. Seems like he's taking, you know, the next 2 or 3 weeks off to go play in the mountains, go play golf. So you get me, but it's gonna be a party here. It's gonna be a great show. We got a lot of content and a lot of great guests coming in with me today. Jody Jackson talking about the Diamondbacks and kind of the wait, see, and pray for the D-backs to see if keep their postseason hopes alive with the Mets and Braves starting here in a few minutes, going doubleheader today. We're also going to talk Cardinals football and another team that kind of needs saving after a tough, brutal loss to the Commanders at home last night. Jody's going to break down everything. You know, it's going to be an awesome to speak to her on the baseball side and the football side and break down her knowledge, as well as look ahead, because the Cardinals get to play the San Francisco 49ers and Santa Clara, who come off a big must-needed victory against the Patriots at home this past week. And Brock Purdy, all the storylines of Brock Purdy say, hey, he's a product of the system. He's a, you know, he's only good because he has Christian McCaffrey and Debo and Kittle. It's kind of hushing all those people right now, and deservedly so for his game and his performance week in and week out, leads the NFL in passing yards. So we're gonna dive into all that, look ahead a little bit. We also have Jordan Hamm. Jordan Hamm, one of the best to cover college football in the state of Arizona. And he's all over the place. You know, he was at Salt Lake City this past weekend watching University of Arizona take down Utah, something they have not been able to do since 2014. So Coach Brennan, you know, another subject where they're quieting some of the haters on the outside of the program and in the fan base after their loss to Kansas State 2 weeks ago. They regenerated during the bye, and then they go into Salt Lake City and beat the number 10 team in the country in Utah. Then we're going to head up to Tempe, the Sun Devils. Coach Kenny Dillingham has them rolling. They just split that Texas series, going 1-1 against Texas State and then losing in Lubbock to Texas Tech. Similar pattern, though. They're in a bye week right now, trying to get some players healthy. They host Kansas, a Jayhawks team that they've been down. A lot of people thought that Kansas team was going to be a top team in that Big 12 conference. And they've struggled. They've struggled mightily here, and they're 1-4. And so when I look at an ASU and I get to talk to Jordan, I say, hey, you know, it's a 3-1 Sun Devil team, but 4-1. I even called this, said kind of must win when I'm just looking at this game. And the reason being, 4-1's pattern is a heck of a lot different going 3-2, especially when you look at kind of the gauntlet of games, especially road games that the Sun Devils have to go into. They have to fix a lot of stuff. So we're going to talk to Jordan, and he's going to break all that stuff down. But where I want to start, I want to backtrack in here and talk Arizona high school football. And what I want to talk about, I kind of want to talk about the evolution of high school football and especially in recruiting. So I've been here for 8 years, and I specialize in Arizona high school football recruiting. So to say, I kind of found that niche. And I love it. It's happy times. We're not breaking down anything that's in too much of a negative light. It's no drama. It's kids receiving offers and getting that first opportunity. You know, that a lot of the times it's life-changing opportunities. And then following their journey to college football, and now it's doing it for 8 years, we have that generation that's not just playing on Sundays. They're making an impact on Sundays in the NFL and seeing, being on the outside looking in and following those kids' journeys. It's just really, really cool to see. And I want to go to a tweet that Brad Sesmatt wrote on Saturday. And he said, flipping through channels, watching the college football schedule, that he turned on Louisville versus Notre Dame. Now, Louisville starting quarterback, Tyler Shuck, Hamilton product, and his journey has been incredible to see. Some of the programs that he's been a part of collegiately, now he's at Louisville and leading them over Notre Dame, a Notre Dame team that has a Brophy alum, Ben Morrison, who looks like the next best corner coming in next year's draft, and also a true freshman named Kennedy Urlacher, who's out of Chandler High School. And it seems literally with Kennedy, just yesterday he was playing for the Chandler Wolves, because he was about less than 11 months ago, 10 months ago, he was in a Chandler Wolves uniform. And Ben Morrison, that seems like also just a year ago, but he was Brophy alum a couple years ago. And I remember watching him in person and following his recruiting journey. And why I want to start there is talk about Arizona high school football and how special it is. And not so to speak the why or the how of this, but just how cool it is. I think just me and so many media members that are part of our Sports 360 team, we dedicate our platform for the high school athlete. We love it. It's such a special scene. Arizona high school football here is so special for many, many reasons. We have phenomenal coaching. Our coaching in the state of Arizona, in my opinion, does not get enough praise. We have incredible football coaches. It is a hotbed for recruiting because colleges can come here and see 20 schools in a day, and they have fun. So we have great weather year round, especially during the fall and the winter when they really come in recruiting, early spring as well. But the player, you know, the player and the evolution of players, and it's so amazing to see on Saturday, going back to Brad's tweet, where it's, hey, oh my, you know, this guy is from here, this guy's from here, this guy's from here, and they're impact players, you know, and they all have amazing stories. There's a game this week here locally, by the biggest game of the week. Brophy, head coach Jason Jewell, part of the recruiting roundup here that I do with Claudia Collins. He's the head coach at Brophy. He's got a million kids with Division I offers. They play Basha, another school, ton of kids with Division I offers, okay? I just always put myself back into when I played, and it was so unique to play a team that had a kid who had Division I interest. I thought it was, you know, as a defensive player, looking at scouting reports, where we got told, hey, this kid got offered by local San Jose State. This kid has a Sac State offer. It was like, oh, that was the biggest deal. And it was covered in the newspaper every single week. And that kid was usually highlighted every single week. And rightfully so. That is an amazing journey. Here it's like the norm, you know, and I don't use that as a negative connotation. I think that's incredible. That's the norm. Like, we follow so many teams where instead of, oh, this kid has this, is, well, how many kids do they have that have D1 interest, which is incredible, you know, and I think it's so many things. We have so much talent in the state of Arizona. These kids put in so much work, not just in the football season. They do a great job of playing multiple sports. They do a great job of getting their work done in the classroom. And we highlight that with the all academic teams. I love that we do that with Sports 360 because that's such a big piece in recruiting. But Basha Brophy, 20 plus kids with Division I offers. And we're not talking like run of the mill programs here. Okay. We're talking some of the best of the best, and not just the senior class. We got sophomores at Basha High School who have 20 plus Division I offers. Jake Hildebrand, offensive tackle, class of 2027. He's a sophomore. Okay. 6'5", 280 plus, 20 plus offers already. He'll be a Saturday guy. Noah Roberts, their running back. Okay. The running backs, think of college football recruiting, the state of California, the state of Texas, the state of Florida. Okay. In our backyard, South Chandler, Noah Roberts. Okay. He's one of the best running backs in that class in the country. And he's playing at Basha High School. I think that's so amazing. I think it draws so much media attention, rightfully so. It's Arizona's just exploded in that sense. And even since I got here in 2017, there was so much talent. I came in the tail end of Brock Purdy, of Spencer Rattler, of Tyler Shuck. Those guys, you could consider the pinnacle, right, of what they're doing. But the amount of kids we have and the amount of young talent we have, and I know there's the opinion of, well, you know, you don't know how these kids are panning out. They're panning out right now. These are the nows. This isn't a kid who's playing freshman football or sophomore or JV football that we say, oh, this kid's going to be. No, they're the nows. They're some of the best players in the state right now at the varsity level. And I think that's amazing. And enough of me talking about it. Let's bring in another expert to talk about this. And joining me soon after this break is Rolf Amstein. Stay tuned. All right, we're going to talk more about this segment. And joining me is a good friend of mine, Rolf Amstein. And Rolf, I'm looking at your Twitter bio and you're running out of characters. So to introduce you, Unafraid Show, Arizona Varsity, Sports 360 AZ platform with us, ASU Forecast, you do 18 million things like you always do. You covered Arizona high school football for so many years. That's how me and you got to meet and get to know each other. You're out in North Carolina now, but you've seen the evolution of this. I mean, we've seen so many players really in the last 10 years dominate the Arizona high school football scene, make names for them. They all have their own unique stories. And then you get to watch them on Saturdays. So there's so many alums playing on Saturdays. It's so cool to see. And now we have that generation where they're not just NFL, they're making NFL rosters. The Brock Purdy's of the world, Bijan Robinson's of the world, they are impact players every Sunday. So you sit back, you're looking at the last 10 years. How cool is it, man, just to not just to be a part, because we're very similar. It's like, it's cool to be a part of the story, but it's just cool to see the story as well.
Yeah, it's cool when you believed something was true, and then it becomes true. Like, how cool is that? I'm one of many people who thought that Arizona high school football was special for a number of reasons. Started doing what I do back in 2012, when there was definitely some recruiting attention on the state. It was escalating. Rivals.com even had an employee living here at the time, Rob Cassidy. So they knew it was ramping up. And then to see what it's become over the last 10 to 12 years, it's just, you know, I don't think I'm right about much. And so I really cling to this one that I believe that Arizona high school football was really something special, that it was an untapped resource. And now to look across the college football landscape and to see starting quarterbacks all over the place, from, you know, from Rice to Louisville, from coast to coast, you know, right here in North Carolina, there's several players that I could just go see with a 2-hour drive. And it's been that way for years now. So I don't know. It's just, it's so awesome to see a thing that I thought could be true actually come to fruition. And there's no stopping it now.
Yeah. I'm a California product and regarded as one of the best high school football states in the country. Just so many people, so many schools. And I remember playing and it being a huge deal if local San Jose State had offered a kid, like, hey, we're playing against a team that San Jose State offered. Like, this is huge. And I mean, that kid would be in the newspaper every single week. And God forbid if Cal came in and offered a kid. Then it was, you know, times two, like, we can't believe we're about to play someone who Cal just offered. And I remember that being a huge deal. And that was my shell shock when I came down to the Valley after graduating from NAU. And it's my 8th year covering Arizona high school football, which is crazy. It's gone by a blink of an eye. But my shell shock to the state was covering some of the first games and going, okay, wait a minute. This school, Hamilton High School, has 5 or 6 Division I kids. Every game it was like, what do you mean they have 3 Division I kids, 4 Division I kids? This week, Basha plays Brophy, okay? 20-plus kids with Division I offers. It's almost like, and that's not a norm, it's not a normal game, but it's like every school in the state of Arizona has products. And that's what's incredible. When you see the growth of that, you just kind of just scratch your head and go, wow, like, what a special state.
Yeah, and I think you'll agree, one of the differences between Arizona and California is there is a pretty substantial amount of schools in California who accumulate 3 to 4 Division I athletes, throw them out there and hope for the best, right? The thing about Arizona high school football has been elevated schemes.
Yep.
It's been on the cutting edge of coaching from back when Jeremy Hathcock had the only teams that were throwing for 3,000 yards to if you don't have a 3,000 yard passer at your school, you're probably a year away from having it, yep. Right? So that's been the biggest part of it for me, is that a lot of great athletes are coming in to play in a lot of great schemes, which showcases their talent. And it's not so much that you just cobbled together a bunch of 1-year transfer, you know, nothing against California, but the movement is immense. Yeah. You know, you'll have a kid play at 4 schools in 4 years, just trying to find the right fit for him. And people are kind of just trying to collect talent. There's a lot of great coaches in California as well, but in Arizona, it really feels like you've got lifers who are dedicated to the scheme, who don't just make the jump to college right away, but win a few championships along the way, like a Sean Aguano or a Jason Bonds. And so Charlie Regal, of course. So it's been really, really cool to see that the quality of football is very good in addition to the talent.
You're in an awesome, unique position now where you're a football dad. You're in the stands all week and 2 sons playing high school football in North Carolina. And heck, your oldest, I keep watching the linebacker highlights, man, and he's got those athletic genes from Aaron. He is kicking.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's it.
But I want to ask, obviously you're not, you've never changed that, but what do you miss about being like feet down on the ground covering Arizona high school football every week?
There's nothing, nothing in the world that's better than spending all day long dreading being out on a sideline in 110 degree heat. And then the moment that you step out of your car, you go through security, you sign in on the AIA checklist, and then you see your friends on the sideline who all love Arizona high school football. You get your feet on the grass or the turf now that Chandler Unified School District has switched over. You know, you get your feet on the grass, and then one of those sunsets hits, one of those September sunsets, and then you just watch some good football. And at the end of the night, you're as thirsty as you've ever been. You're as hungry as you've ever been. And then you go out to eat. You talk ball with a bunch of other Arizona high school media members. Friday nights in Arizona, there's absolutely nothing better. Now I'm in a position where I get to watch 4 to 5 games at a time, but it's just not satisfying. It's not, you don't hear the pads. You don't get to dap up the assistant coaches that you know one day are going to be on their way to a higher level, being a head coach somewhere. And you don't get to see these kids in person and see the work that they've done over time. So I really, really miss being on the sideline, even though every single Friday I would just sit and think to myself, oh, wow, I'm really going outside in this.
I know. I was broadcasting last week, 110 degrees still, in week 5 of the Arizona high school football season. You know, one day, they keep saying one day it's going to cool down, and so hopefully that day is here soon. But hey,
there's nothing like Arizona high school football, nothing in the entire world. And unless they're playing high school football in Dubai, there is nothing like it.
All right. No prep. I mean, this is all real conversations. And so I want you to tell just a little bit of a story, but I'm going to take some things away from you. Some of the athletes that we have got to cover that have made it to the biggest level. I mean, we could do an hour of Brock Purdy and the way, especially with you guys covering C-Town Rivals for X amount of years, that whole story would take an hour. Bijan Robinson, us really getting to know Bijan Robinson in Atlanta, and just how, forget about the football talent, like how incredible of a person Bijan Robinson was. Deuce Robinson too, like some of the most humble superstars. Like these are probably going to be multimillionaires, very, very successful, even if football never worked out, because that's their personality and the characteristics that they bring to the table. They're that kind of people. I want to take those stories. What, tell us a story of a kid who maybe played at collegiate level or something like that, that you just, you go, man, that was, it was an awesome time to be in that moment and follow that kid's journey.
Oh my gosh. There are so many. There was a year, 2015. I think it was maybe right before you were,
yeah, pre-Cody.
Yeah. So pre-Cody. In 2015 PC, there was a Centennial team that actually had gotten placed into a 6A super division, and they didn't want to be there. They tried to petition out, and it got denied by the AIA. And then you watch that 2015 Centennial team fight and scrap its way to a championship. And it was against a Desert Ridge team that was anchored by DJ Davidson, who is now on the New York Giants. And both of those teams were really, to me, the epitome of Arizona high school football, because there were so many teams that year that had 5 to 6 Division I athletes. And coaching, you know, and some injury circumstances that affected teams like Chandler. But coaching really, really won out. And it was a masterclass by Richard Taylor. And he had guys like John Rincon, who was just this incredible leader, incredible linebacker, fullback, prototypical high school football player, just absolute Captain America, lived, ate, breathed, slept football. And he was so dominant despite not being that D1 high level athlete. And the entire team was filled with players like that. And they went up against a Desert Ridge team that was very well coached, and then just had this very, very clearly high level SEC Division I defensive tackle anchoring them. And I remember talking to DJ Davidson, who was at Desert Ridge, and he was getting letters and stuff, but he didn't really have the grades. And he spent a year after high school just grinding, ended up getting an offer from Chris Thompson over at Arizona State and made an NFL career out of it. And then you look at that Centennial team, and a bunch of those kids went on to either walk on or play at lower levels, have a lot of success at the collegiate level, and now are back in Arizona coaching high school football and helping out with high school football. And so that was a team of you know, kids who the recruiting environment wasn't really what it needed to be yet, but they didn't care. They weren't playing for offers. They weren't playing for clicks. They weren't playing for attention. They were playing for each other. And it, to me, it's the best year of high school football that Arizona's ever had. And you got to see stars emerge who are going to come back and really reinvest in the community. And yeah, that's my absolute favorite story, is that DJ Davidson wasn't a diamond in the rough because it was obvious, but he did the work to get where he needed to go. Meanwhile, Centennial was full of those guys, and they're the kind of people who are going to be around Arizona high school football for the next 40 years.
Yeah, it's a full circle moment. I love seeing some of the alums now that played. Heck, I mean, as late or as early as 2017, 18, 19, a lot of those guys are back coaching the local high school scene. And that's
Trevor Russell. Trevor Russell. Over on the sideline at Higley.
Zach Bowers is a linebackers coach for Arizona College Prep under Steve Vaught. So, like, you know, seeing those names, I'm like, wow, I feel like that was just yesterday. And now these guys are like 24, 25 years old and coaching. So it is awesome. Ralph, always appreciate your time. Check this out. Look at who gets to follow you. Next up is Jody Jackson. So we go Ralph Amsden to Jody Jackson, finishing with Jordan Ham. But yeah, we get D-backs and Cardinals talk with Jody Jackson. How great is that?
I don't belong here. I absolutely don't belong here. She is so incredibly talented. You're a lucky man. You're in the presence of greatness, just not yet.
Ralph, I appreciate you. And our segment with Jody is next. Okay, welcome back. And now joining me is Jody Jackson. And Jody, I just had Ralph Amsden on and we were talking. I said, hey, Ralph, you know, following you is Jody Jackson. He goes, Cody, that's going to save the show. And he wasn't joking about it. So we get you. So one, thanks for joining me and thanks for saving the show.
It's a great show. I'm just a part of it, a small part. But thanks for saying that, Cody. It's good to be with you.
All right, so let's talk Diamondbacks. So they finished the regular season yesterday, and they go 89-73, you know, in the season. But all eyes are on today, this Mets and Braves series. And I've seen nothing like it, right? And there's so many different scenarios that come into play here. And the Diamondbacks and their fans are kind of in wait, see, and pray mode for today. So passing the mic off to you, kind of explain these scenarios today.
Yeah, it's real simple for the Diamondbacks. They're going to gather at Chase Field. They're going to do some kind of on-field work to stay ready in case they are in the playoffs. And then they're going to just I'll be over there later, but I'm trying to picture exactly what it's going to look like. You know, when the game starts at 10:10, I'm sure they'll have food for the guys. They'll be sitting around. They'll be watching the baseball and they'll be waiting. And it's going to be very, very strange. And, you know, they need the sweep from either side. They need the Braves to take two or the Mets to take two. Because what's going to happen is after game one, whoever wins that game, they're going to just change their scenarios with their pitcher. I know the Braves, for example, if they lose game one, they're going to pitch Chris Sale in game two. You know, the game one matchup is Tyler McGill and Spencer Schwellenbach, and game two is set for Luis Severino, Chris Sale. Now, whoever wins that first game will change that all around. And, you know, it's baseball's crazy though, but I was actually laughing with a couple of the guys as much as they could laugh. It was kind of a mixed feeling. Obviously, a lot of guys were angry yesterday in the clubhouse that they were even in that situation. But I said, you know, you never know the JV squad. If they would come up and beat a team looking to survive, it's not impossible. It's unlikely, but all of this seems unlikely. You started off by saying they had 89 wins. They set the bar higher this year. Yeah. They won five more games and they're still not in. So, you know, they had no one to blame but themselves. And yet here they are with a chance.
Yeah, like you said, this first game is in a couple moments here as of right now. And then that second game here in the afternoon, and all eyes will be on that because, like you said, the D-backs need a sweep. And hate playing worst-case scenario game here, but if they don't get it, And it is split, which I think a lot of people think of that because of who doesn't play in game two if you win game one. If you had to take a look back at the season, well, how would you rank this Diamondbacks here?
You know, I mean, being so close with them, seeing them all season long fight through a number of difficult situations, the biggest one being the fact that Eduardo Rodriguez and Merrill Kelly didn't really pitch till August. I mean, yes, Merrill had four starts in April, but these guys didn't come in to play until August. And then the backup plan that they had, which was Jordan Montgomery, you know, he wasn't good for most of the year. He had a couple of good starts, but for the most part, he pitched poorly. And so when you look at this team, the offense, and, you know, I think we all got drunk on all these 10 run plus games, you know, all these stats, and they all showed up again on Sunday because they did win in big fashion, right? We saw the big inning, we saw six runs in the fourth, and there was so much to love about that. But at the end of the day, when your pitching is, you know, and some guys had great years pitching wise, you know, Brandon Pfaadt pitched pretty well. He had some rough patches, but, you know, when you have a starter ERA, a bullpen ERA, and the bullpen was good at times, you know, but the pitching is what hurt, and it was largely because of those injuries. And yet they fought through it to have the 89 wins. So you can really look at it glass half full, glass half empty. The biggest problem, though, Cody, is they did fail in this final week. I mean, they weren't able to secure their spot. They had a chance, and it goes back to the prior week, losing 2 of 3 to the Rockies in Colorado. Yes, losing that game in Milwaukee, which to my point, as horrible as that was, it was one game. They come back, they lose 2 of 3 to the Giants, and then they lose 2 of 3 to the Padres. The Padres are a good team.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, a lot of things that hadn't happened all year happened. Ketel Marte he'd only made 4 errors. Or, yeah. It was under 5, you know, and then he makes really 2 errors. One was not considered an error, but it was. And then AJ Puk had 1 run given up in 42 innings and he blows up. And I don't blame AJ Puk. I don't blame Torey Lovello for not thinking he's going to be, why wouldn't he think he would be shut down? So a lot of things happened that you can chalk up to that's baseball, and it stinks and it sucks and it's horrible. But, and yes, should they have done better? They should have, but here we are.
Uncut Gems with Jody Jackson, presented by Edie Marshall Jewelers. Let's talk Cardinals football and an absolute brutal loss for the Cardinals. To me, there's nowhere to put it because they lose 42-14 to the Commanders yesterday, but it's also the return of Jaden Daniels, who's playing out of his mind, and his ASU journey to LSU. There's a lot of stuff there, but he comes in the state of Arizona and blows out the Cardinals out of him. And the return of Cliff Kingsbury. Same thing. Sour break up there. He comes on, play caller for the Commanders. And what does he do? He drops 40-plus on his former team. What happened here in this one for the Cardinals?
Well, you know, I had a lot of catching up to do coming out of the Diamondbacks game. And of course, I dove right into that. And what was disturbing to me were a lot of things. Not being able to stop the run.
Yep.
Jaden Daniels is you know, what a lot of people thought he could be, you know. But the optics are not good. There's not a good feeling among the fans or the organization when you see Cliff Kingsbury roll in, and there's a lot of videos of him swirling, right? He's walking out with his shades on, and he's got his rolling bag, and he's like looking cool, like he stole a victory in the night. But and then they give him the game ball, and it was a raucous scene inside the Commanders locker room. And I think what's tough, though, is the fact that Jaden Daniels is able to come in and do something so early on with the help of Cliff Kingsbury that Kyler Murray was only really able to do in brief stints, you know, and we'll see where this all lands. We'll see where the Commanders land at the end. I'm not saying they won't be a playoff team or be good. I don't know. But Kyler Murray, I think the problem that we've seen with this team, and number one for me was they couldn't stop the run. Mm-hmm. When you have 37 carries for 216 yards, you know, the Commanders were possessing the ball. That's the stat that's going to win you the game. They were 9 for 12 on third down. But for the Cardinals, you know, and you can't just say defense aside, but because the defense was that bad. But for Kyler, the issue that I have is the indecisiveness. Mm-hmm. You know, there were moments where he had receivers open and he just was not able to pull the trigger on the play for whatever reason, whether he's not seeing it, whether he's feeling the pressure too soon. And he wasn't running the ball effectively like we saw in that Rams game. you get wildly excited about what you see in that Rams game, and he's not able to duplicate it against a defense with Washington. That's what really got me, is that I thought maybe this is going to be 42-35.
Yeah.
It's going to be 42-31. I thought they could score a lot of points against this Washington defense, and they weren't able to do it. They ran the ball okay. James Conner ran the ball pretty effectively when he was out there, but for Kyler, it all looked so disjointed. And then to come out of the half and have the drive with a holding, and then the Michael Wilson and all of these things that just, they looked not connected at all. It's pretty disappointing, because I think a lot of fans would have been able to stomach a loss that was where the Cardinals put up even 25 yeah. points, 30 mm-hmm. points. And a loss is a loss. I get that. But we did not see an offense that looked potent at all.
Yeah, Cardinals dropped to 1-3. And Jody, like you said, they got a lot of things to fix here. And they got to do it quickly, because they're on the road and they play the San Francisco 49ers. And we've seen all the headlines of Brock Purdy, you know, system quarterback, only good because Shanahan and Chris McCaffrey and all the starting. I mean, he's quieting everybody down. He leads the NFL in passing yards. And on a run game without Chris McCaffrey, Jordan Mason has become a juggernaut for that offense. And every single week, he is putting incredible numbers up and running the ball effectively. And so you're the Cardinals, you got to fix that. Is it time to click panic mode on Arizona Cardinal football? Is that too early to say, or what do you think? Well,
you know, I just think 1-3 after you just had three home games is tough. But I am also not, as a rational journalist for many years, been doing this a long time, to panic after four games also doesn't seem like a lot of common sense. It's just, you're right, it gets very tough now. 49ers and Green Bay. Again, you had your opportunities in those home games. Now you face two teams that have shown they're very explosive. Mm-hmm. And so you have to match that explosiveness. You can't, if you're an offensive player, you cannot be concerned about your defense and what the state of that is, right? So I'm looking for, we know that the defense has troubles. And they lost Justin Jones, and they don't have Darius Robinson. And is he coming back this week? We don't know. If they get Darius Robinson back, it will help. It won't fix everything because they have problems up front and they have problems on the back end as well. But, you know, again, you saw some good signs, which is Buda Baker, Kazir White, Mack Wilson Sr. Those guys have been very good so far this season. But what you don't like to see are these offenses that are coming in. And as the Cardinals go, they've got to find a way to match. Now, they were able to gash the Niners last year in the run game. So, you know, they always want to rely on the run game. But the problem is, when you get behind, it's going to be the same question. Is Kyler Murray able to make plays? Yes, he threw a touchdown to Marvin Harrison Jr. After that, he wasn't as much a factor in the game. So more tests for Kyler Murray, because as the leader of the offense, that's where it stands. But against the Niners, they found some secret sauce in running the ball against them last year. I know it is a different season, but let's hope that they can do that again, because that's the way, much like going back to that Rams game, that Kyler Murray will be able to operate, because you can't run play action if you're not running the ball.
Yeah. Uncut Gems with Jody Jackson, always delivering the goods. And up next, we will have Jordan Hamm. Jody, we're going to stay here, stream show. I got one last question for you. So I was watching a broadcast couple weeks ago, Red Mountain TV, good friend Zach Warhack broadcasting, and to the left of him, because I heard, hey, you know, they got this new color analyst coming in, talking high school football. I was like, I'll give it a shot. Watching a nice intro, beautiful zone shot of the open, and then joining.
Oh, yeah, they do a great job.
Great job, there. Right? Well, joining him, next to him, is Jody Jackson. I'm like, oh, my God, this is great. here's what I got to tell you. So high school football, you have been a high school mom for many, your son Connor now at Western New Mexico, who's stud quarterback for Corona del Sol last 4 years, which I'm sure just went by in the blink of the eye. It seemed like he was in high school last day. But you prepared, so you said some stuff about Red Mountain. They're playing Desert Ridge, and here you go, analyst, busting out a bunch of facts and pregame analysis on Desert Ridge High School football. How was that experience? You were awesome.
How did I do? Was I okay?
You did great. It was amazing. I was like, I think for me, like to the telling sign is, because you could talk about Red Mountain, right? Like Max Preps, okay, Simon Lopez, QB1, the defense, Kyle Landers. But no, I mean, you were rattling off stuff about Desert Ridge. So I was like, she came prepared.
Well, we try to go both sides. And by the way, Zach does a great job. Yes. So I was just, you know, I mean, he was driving the broadcast. He knows that team extremely well. I tried to do the prep that I could. I think I'm on one or two more of those games, and I'm just getting some reps in the booth, doing a little girls flag football this year too. Nice. So by the way, not only high school mom, and my daughter's still at Corona. She's a softball player. I love it. I love high school sports. And so it never gets to be just a sidebar for me, because it's where everything starts and I love it. And as much as I, obviously, make a living covering pro sports, I've covered everything since I've been in town, including a lot of ASU for that first 12 years I was here. But I really enjoy it. I enjoy just the, communal nature of it all, and everything. It was kind of cool to see the fans were like kind of waving at me like, wait, a go D-backs, like Jody's there. I was like, yeah, I'm off tonight, obviously, because here I am. But I also, just on a personal side note, is I'm never afraid to try to get better at something different. And I really want to do some different things in the booth. Now that I have, we all know that the Arizona Coyotes are gone. And so I've always wanted to spend more time in the booth. And I think I'm going to try to do that. And for me, reps starts at that level. So I want to do that for as much as I can, whether it's football, baseball. So thanks for tuning in. And yeah, Zach and the crew, the entire crew there is amazing. And some are students and some are just out of school and they're doing that for a living. We all know that TV production starts there too. So it was fun.
That's awesome. Another great segment with Jody Jackson. Stay tuned for more content. Hey, welcome back, everybody. And it's time to talk college football. And no one better to talk college football than this man right here. It's Walking On with my good friend Jordan Hand, talking University of Arizona and Arizona State football. Hey, Jordan, first of all, welcome in. And you happen to be in Salt Lake City this past Saturday, where the Wildcats are looking to accomplish something that they haven't done since 2014. And statement win, huge road victory. Wildcats moved to 3-1 on the year. 23-10 victory. Take it away. What did you see from this one?
Yeah, it was really impressive that they won there. Like you said, first time in a decade that they've done that. And honestly, I asked a couple of the players post game, what was life like for you in 2014, the last time that U of A won at Rice-Eccles Stadium? And they were like, I'm pretty sure I was in middle school. It might even be elementary school. I'm not entirely sure. So yeah, it's been a minute since that has happened. But to me, what stood out was the way that they won that game. It was, they pretty much out Utah'd Utah. They were able to out physical one of the most physical teams in college football, a team that we saw do exactly that to Oklahoma State, who's a really physical team, and Utah really handled them the week prior. And they came in, they stopped four fourth down conversion attempts from Utah. And I think if they convert one or two of those, it's a really different ball game. And Utah is really on the offensive. But Arizona was able to come in, even with all the defensive struggles that they have had against mobile quarterbacks, against just in general with penalties and things like that. We really didn't see much of that. Look, Rice-Eccles, I've been there quite a few times now. It's a great crowd. It's a great environment. It's really tough to play in. And there were spurts of time where that Utah crowd was silent. Like, U of A was really taking it to them. So there was that. And I think a key portion of this that might get overlooked a little bit is Tyler Loop, their kicker. Mm-hmm. He came in, he went 3-for-4. And really that fourth field goal was a long one at the end of the game. But he was the one that was just adding three points, making it a two-score game. Like, there were some key moments. And, I was talking to Brent Brennan after the game and asked him about it. And he goes, I've never really had a kicker where we get on the right side of the 50. And it's kind of like, Tyler could probably kick this and make it. So it's an incredible luxury to have, as we've talked so many times. College kickers is kind of a pejorative, and it's used in jest, but to have one of the most consistent in the country, that is a massive advantage that U of A has.
No, it's a huge bounce back victory, but not just that. Like, I think the fan base was upset, right? It was in 2 weeks since they lost to K-State, and the week prior they didn't play NAU very well. It wasn't a very strong game for the Wildcats. And so after the K-State, you have another week to marinate it because you had the bye. And so you talk about how big of a win this was. It was massive, not just for the team. It kind of quieted the fans to go, oh, it's was this the right pick at coach, even though Coach Brennan's done such an amazing job? Like you said, the way they did it, they ran at will against a tough front seven. And then watching some of your highlights, how about the Arizona high school football alums, especially defensively? Genesis Smith, Gunnar Maldonado, huge interceptions in that football game. The defensive backfield, Dakario Davis, who's a stud too, a couple huge pass breakdowns, 50% passing completion for Isaac Wilson, the true freshman for Utah. And so that was a monumental, like a defense that they had their question marks. What impressed you about that unit and a win where they hold the top 10 team in the country to only 10 points at home?
Yeah, and I think one guy that really set the tone, and then he unfortunately left the game pretty early, was Traydon Stukes. That first fourth down, he was the leader on that play that stuffed Utah. And, you know, it feels like a lot, there are a lot of studs on that team on and that side of the football, but it really feels like as he goes, the defense goes. And when he's healthy, when he's able to go full, you know, full blast, you know, he's a guy that can really dictate a lot on that side of the ball. And it just looked like they played a lot looser. And the defense with the defensive line, it was almost like hockey substitutions at times where there would be four guys coming on, four guys coming off. So I think that they were very wise in how they were able to kind of have the advantage. And I'm using the word dictate a lot, but it really felt like they were in control of the game, not necessarily Utah, and make life really hard for a young, talented quarterback, but still one that doesn't have a ton of experience at the college football level. And there were times that they were able to really, I think, take advantage of that and then stuff a really good run game that, like I said, the previous week against Oklahoma State was running at will. And they were really able to limit that and make life really, really difficult for the Utes.
Jordan, let's head north and enter Tempe. 3-1 Sun Devils, huge game on Saturday hosting a Kansas team that, let's face it, they have struggled. A lot of people thought Kansas could be really, really good, especially after their season they had last year and the players they returned. They're 1-4. You know, Jayhawks fans are quite upset here. Kenny Dillingham, ASU splits the Texas series, going 1-1 against Texas State and Texas Tech in Lubbock. Had a bye, get some players back healthy. I think that stadium's going to be rocking. I've been there a couple times this year with you, and that stadium has been rocking. Coach Kenny Dillingham preached that. I think it's not going to change on Saturday. But with that being said, do you view this as kind of like a must win for ASU looking at their next couple games here as they enter Big 12 conference play?
I don't know if it's quite a must win, but it feels like it's kind of a choose your own adventure, or like there are two paths that you can go down. You know, 4-1 versus 3-2 feel very, very different. And you're going to be at home for the first time in a while. You're going to have a 5 o'clock kick. And I think we are expecting some better weather, but it looks like it's going to be over 100 degrees. So you have an advantage there. Kind of like with U of A, they're coming off a loss. They had to sit on it and just kind of stew in it a little bit during the bye week. They're going to get some of these guys back and really add to that depth. And now they have, you know, they had a little bit of extra time to look at this Kansas team, which, yes, has underachieved, but they have a lot of playmakers on that team. So, and I feel like with this Big 12 conference, there is so much up and down. You know, week two or three, it looked like Texas Tech was not going to be a good football team, and then they've rattled off a couple really nice wins. You've looked at really, I mean, it feels like 14 of the 16 teams have some days looked really, really good, like they could potentially make a run at a championship berth, and then other times they look like they aren't going to make a bowl game. So this really feels kind of like the chaos conference a little bit, where it's just a bunch of really good teams, and you catch them on the wrong day, it could be a bad day for you. Catch them on the right day, you could go steal a victory. So by no means should they be taken lightly, even though they have one win. But this is a talented group, and one that is continuing to build. And I think, honestly, a group that ASU can look at and see a lot of similarities in how they're trying to build up a program and, you know, get to the top half of this conference. So I don't know that it's a must win, but it certainly, you get that momentum going coming off the bye. There is a tough stretch that's coming. You know, coming out of the bye, they were talking about how it's kind of, they're splitting up the season a little bit. You have your first four games, you have your middle three, then you have a bye, then you have your final five. So like, let's try to compartmentalize these a little bit, and then really just kind of try to get this ball rolling.
It's interesting for Kansas too, because just like ASU going to Texas, it's such a recruiting pipeline for them right now in that coaching staff. It's the reason why Kenny Dillingham, like that Thursday game against Texas State, hey, all eyes on us, especially on TV ratings and the high school players of Texas. Kansas dominated the recruiting scene last cycle here in the state of Arizona. A couple of those freshmen, Deshaun Warner out of Desert Edge, Andre Gibson, they're seeing playing time. Deshaun Warner's playing for Kansas, you know, and they have kids in the 2025 class locked and committed to. And that staff wants to come in here and prove a point as well, to not just get a win in the column, but also attract to the Arizona high school football scene going, hey, guys, look what we can do. And obviously, Kenny Dillingham and staff wants to squash that. I think a big thing with ASU, though, penalties. They have been crushed with penalties, continuously shooting themselves in the foot the last 2 weeks. Have to clean that up, especially in Big 12 play. Jordan, ASU, once you look at that back half of the schedule, though, too, if they do win on Saturday, starting 4-1, how big is that for the staff and really a program where they said, hey, if they can get to 5 wins this year, that's a successful thing. Starting 4-1 would be massive.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the start of the year, I said 6-6. I thought, with all the crap that happened last year, where it was a 3-win team, you were still, you know, the ball bounces a different way in the Cal game, in the Colorado game, in the Washington game, and you could get a victory there. So, for a roster that I think was pretty inferior to this one, and so much, uncertainty, so much adversity they had to go through. Realistically, that could have been a 5-win team. So the fact that they bring back a better roster, the culture is more established, the coaches are in place, and you're really seeing this identity start to really take shape. That's why I felt like 6 wins was totally realistic. But that makes life so much easier going in. You're going to have some tough games on the road. You know, you look at Oklahoma State, Kansas State on the road in a few weeks. You got to go to Arizona for the Territorial Cup, and you know who knows what that game could look like. So that would set themselves up really, really well. And again, this is going to be, I think, a really chaotic conference schedule for really all the teams in the conference. But wherever you can get your opportunities to get a win, you really got to take hold and grab on and get that W in the win column, much like Colorado did on the road this past week against UCF. I don't know if many people were expecting to see that and the way that they were able to do it, but that's what I think the brand of this conference is going to be not only for this year, but in the near future.
Walking on with Jordan Hamm, always bring the best content, University of Arizona and Arizona State football. Jordan, thanks for joining me, man.
Absolutely.